Tony will come and share the gospel reading with us.
Scripture this morning is from Matthew 22, verses 15 through 22. Then the Pharisees went and plotted to entrap him, that is Jesus, in what he said. So they sent their disciples to him, along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are sincere and teach the way of God in accordance with the truth, and show deference to no one, for you do not regard people with partiality. Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why are you putting me to the test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin used for the tax." And they brought him a denarius. And then he said to them, "Whose head is this and whose title?" And they answered, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Give therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard this, they were amazed, and they left him and went away. Amen.
I've struggled some this week to know what to say this morning. Last week, you all sort of got my, full-fledged peacemaker, Jesus the Third Way sermon, and then it was like, okay, now what? I've dealt with, I'm sure as many of you are, ongoing concern and pain about what's happening in this war right now between Israel and Hamas, along with all the other problems and challenges of our world. As I said last week, we have to find ways to get past the anger and the reactivity. We have to let ourselves feel the sorrow and work through it if we're going to find ways to be compassionate. So this week, I've continued to feel some strong flashes of anger. But mostly, I have felt heavy. Grieving when I read or hear the news. Heartbroken when I see what's going on. Deciding how much to take in. We all have to do this, right? You cannot take it all in. You have to choose how much you can handle. Wanting to be informed, but also knowing that there's life to live and things still going on and trying to find that balance. In weeks like this one, I'm reminded of Wendell Berry's poem that I'm sure many of you also know, "The Peace of Wild Things." This was written during the Vietnam War. "When despair for the world grows in me and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down with the woodrake, or where the woodrake rests his beauty on the water, where the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting with their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world and am free." I am so grateful that God has given us the fullness of fall this week. I confess, I was a doubter this year. I kept thinking, this is just not going to be a great fall. Things looked really muted, and there were some trees already losing all their leaves out my way, and I just thought, okay, it's just going to be a so-so kind of autumn. But the last few days have been glorious, reminding us, as I said, to the kids of God's goodness, the beauty all around us, the beauty of wild things, of God's creation, can ground us, can comfort us, can reassure us, can uplift us, can give us peace. So I knew that this was the Sunday that the call to worship was going to be Psalm 65. Psalm 65 is one of my favorite psalms, and I always try to save it for the best fall Sunday. And I also remembered what Marion Coger had shared as a possible earth prayer for this month, and I didn't end up using it earlier in October, from Henry Nouwen's Genesee Diary, where he wrote about one day when the spiritual director had reflected reading Psalm 65, and the director spoke about autumn as a time of plentitude, a time of fulfillment in which the richness of nature becomes abundantly visible, but also a time in which nature points beyond itself by the fragility of its passing beauty. Fall is more beautiful because we know it won't last. We know it is fleeting. Today's beauty can be blown away by the wind and rain, and what is left is brown and soggy leaves lying on the ground. We know we need to savor it, to pay attention now. That's part of what we need, isn't it? That reorientation to the present moment. And as I said, our opening hymn, based also on another psalm about nature, Psalm 104, sings of how nature's beauty points us toward the creator of it all, the King of kings, the ruler of all rulers, the source of all that is, the ground of being. Choose your phrase. These psalms give us perspective, as does the world around us, the creation, nature's beauty. They reorient us. They bring us back to the present moment. I think, if this isn't too hard a segue, that in this reading, Jesus is also offering a reorientation, a change of perspective. The Pharisees and the Herodians are trying to trap him. They are united only in their opposition to Jesus. These are two very different camps coming together to try to trap him into saying something that one way or the other will get him in real trouble. We know the name Pharisees. They were the separatists, the hyper-religious, convinced that the way to bring about deliverance was through rigid, fundamentalist obedience to the law. And they sought to avoid any association with Rome, with the occupiers, or with any non-Jews, really. The Herodians were the people of King Herod. They were the political operatives of the day. They were the wheelers and dealers trying to figure out how they could use Rome's presence to advance their own objectives of power and influence. So somehow they get together, though, to come to Jesus and say, "So, should we pay this tax to Caesar?" He knew it was a trap. He was no fool. For one thing, they were together. That told him something. There were a lot of taxes being levied against the people of Palestine under Rome. But I've learned this week that this particular tax would have been the poll tax. Every year, every adult age 14 and above was expected to pay a denarius as their tribute to Caesar, as the emperor. A denarius was about a day's wage for a poor man, so it wasn't a huge amount of money, although if you were a poor man living day to day, it was a day's wage. It was your family's food for that day. But it was also the most obvious, stick-in-your-craw kind of a reminder of Rome's power, that every single person had to do this, pay tribute to Caesar. It applied to everyone. Many, many Jewish people believed that paying it was really an act of treason because you were paying tribute to Caesar, who claimed, of course, that he was the Son of God. But on the other side, Rome said if you didn't pay it, it was an act of treason, and you could go to jail or worse. So they say to Jesus, what do you say? And they give him, they lay it on thick, don't they? Oh, you're so wise, and you don't give partiality to anybody, you know, right. And then they say, what do you say? It was no win, right? If he said, don't pay it, the Herodians would report him. If he said, do pay it, most of the crowd would be turned against him. And Jesus says, well, do you have one of these coins? Now, of course, the Pharisees probably wouldn't even dare to carry one of these coins. So probably a Herodian had to produce the coin. And he looks at it. One of the things we've read in Bible study, the First Nations New Testament actually had a little parenthetical picture of Jesus kind of holding it up. Whose picture is on here? Whose image, that's an important word, whose image is on this coin? Caesar. Whose inscription is on this coin? Whose name? Caesar. Okay. Give to Caesar what is Caesar's, but give to God what is God's. What does the Genesis story tell us about whose image is on us? Whose image are we made in? Genesis says humankind was made in the image of God. In the image of God, God made us, male and female, all of us, in the image of God. Now, this text has been used of one of several to talk about the separation of church and state. And it does seem to say something along that, although what it says is a little confusing. Because obviously, if you're living under a Roman emperor, your choices are way less limited than if you're living in a democratic society in 2023 in America, right? So the relation, it's not a clear cut. This is exactly how it plays out. But I think Jesus is saying, yes, there's going to be government, and you have to cope with that. You have to figure out how to deal with government's demands. We remember, of course, that not every American chooses the same way to deal with the government's demands. Those of you who are Mennonite participants remind us that there are Mennonites and other Anabaptists who annually choose to refuse to pay their taxes because it goes to support the U.S. military. They send in a letter every year to the IRS saying, I will not pay this. And they have saved money knowing that their taxes will be extracted with fines. And they do it year after year as a sign of objection to our military might. And we remember conscientious objectors from Vietnam War, some of us. I also knew a British Quaker man who was a conscientious objector in Britain during World War II. That must have been hard. So he was a medic in an ambulance corps in the backside of China for the British Army, but refused to ever hold a gun. So there are ways to figure out how you deal with government that don't just mean you have to go along. But I think what is most important is to say, Jesus is saying you may have to pay your dues. And as citizens of a democratic society, we have a lot of power to actually have influence and vote and make difference in what our government decides. But, Jesus says, Caesar's face, Caesar's image is not on your soul. You do not belong to Caesar. You belong only to God. Every earthly power is relative. Finite. God alone is ultimate. We belong to God. And so does every other human being on this planet. Every one of us made in the image of God. Every one of us of equal worth and value. All of us God's children. All belong. And that is a big part of our grief and sorrow right now, is it not? There's a New York Times article this morning, which I'm so pleased that was there, about peace activists in Israel among Palestinians and Jews, who are actually in this terrible time holding out a sliver of hope that out of this horrible war there may be some chance for renewed effort to find real solutions, because it's so obvious that the policies of recent years have totally failed. The article included the story of a young Palestinian Israeli medic who was on a crew working the dance festival for first aid and things at that October 7th dance festival in southern Israel. When the shooting began, the rest of the ambulance crew ran as fast as they could, but this young Palestinian Israeli stayed trying to save the lives of Jews and was killed. His family had been part of peacemaking efforts for many years, and at his wake there were Jews as well as Palestinians, people who knew each other, who care about each other, who know that we all belong to God and that there is no security and peace unless there's peace for everyone. I also found this morning the website of the Alliance for Middle East Peace, which is an umbrella organization of over 170 organizations, tens of thousands of Jews and Palestinians who have been working for years in peacemaking efforts and are continuing to work. One of those organizations has over 700 families who belong to it, Jewish and Palestinian, who've all lost family members to violence. They've met regularly for years, hearing each other's stories, finding ways to support each other. They still had their meeting on Tuesday after the massacre on Saturday. They have not stopped. And we must not stop. Believing that hope is possible. If they haven't given up, how can I give up? Right? All of us belong to God, the image, the face of God on every one of our souls. Each of us precious, beloved.